Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good evening, everyone. This is the Best Ever You Show, and I'm your host, Elizabeth Hamilton. I know we normally do our shows on Tuesdays and Thursdays at 1 p.m. Eastern Time, but tonight we are taking a doing a special show here because we have a really neat guest with us. We have Gina Close. She's an advocate speaker and certified life coach who specializes in the needs of parents of children with severe food allergies. She's the author of the best-selling children's book, One of the Gang, Nurturing the Souls of Children with Food Allergies, and the popular ebook, 10 Things Children with Food Allergies Want You to Know. Gina is the founder of an online support group, AllergyMoms.com, serving thousands of families and professional members worldwide. Her advice and parenting tips have appeared in numerous print, radio, and TV features, including, which we're so happy to have you here on our show, but you've been on CNN, People, ABC World News Tonight, and, you know, you're a regular setup speaker, you do seminars, you write a regular column, and, you know, there's so many things that you do, but Gina, thank you for being with us tonight.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for having me, Elizabeth.
Yes, and for those people following along on their computer, which we have a lot of people that do, please go to Gina's website, which is allergymoms.com, and that's with an S. So let me just spell that, allergymoms.com. So allergymoms.com. How long has that blog been around, Gina?
I started it at the end of 2006.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a long time ago.
And why? There's a reason why, isn't there?
Well, it's my son was formally diagnosed with food allergies at age one, and it really hit me like a ton of bricks. And as soon as I got back, I started a local support group here in Pennsylvania. And then I got a lot of support online, and I started to email one group of friends information about recipes. And then I'd have another group of friends who was interested about advocacy, so I'd email them about, you know, state-like guidelines for food allergy. And I'd mail another group information about the emotional side of food allergies. And finally, I was like, why am I sending all this information? I'm just going to start a newsletter. So I started, you know, back then in 2006, there were some other food allergy websites, not nearly as many as today, but I decided to start a blog, and I even got some ads early on. I had no idea that it was, you know, amazing to be in the black from the get-go, but I thought, well, why don't I just get some advertisements to fund this little endeavor? And that's what I have done, and it's just grown and grown ever since, much more than I had thought, and we have members all over the world, over 10,000 members now, so
yeah.
It's great.
Yeah, I think you and I met back then, and it was sort of just launching, and you weren't sure where to, you know, I think you knew where you were going with it, but it was getting its, you know, getting its internet legs. And at the time,
yeah.
I met you through your book, because you were mm-hmm. so kind to ask me to be in your book. And that's One of the Gang, Nurturing the Souls of Children with Food Allergies. And I love this book. Can you talk a little bit about your book?
Sure. And, you know, thank you. You were one of the people like Kyle Dine, who I didn't know personally, but I knew of your work. And I asked if you would be in the book as a role model of someone who is living well and thriving with food allergies, and you were so gracious to agree to do that, you know, even before I knew you. And my idea for the book was that with other disabilities, even with something like diabetes, sometimes you see people carry that kit or they eat special foods, but a lot of times children with food allergies are not seeing adults that are up in the world and thriving. They may not know that their neighbor down the street actually is functioning very well with food allergies. They're just not seeing it. So I had an idea to go ahead and show them some role models like Jerome Bettis, you know, a big, tough Pittsburgh Steelers Super Bowl champ that has a shellfish allergy and asthma, and Kyle Dine, the musician, and Robert Wood, the allergist, and, of course, you, a beauty queen, and I thought it would be so great for little girls to see you wearing your medical alert bracelet with your tiara, and, of course, they love that. So thank you for doing that, and I think it's a great idea to show kids that, you know, there are things that they have to do to stay safe, but none of that is going to stop them from living a wonderful life even with food allergies.
Oh, yeah, and thank you for including me, but, you know, more importantly, that book is just, it's just outstanding because it does exactly what you wanted it to do. You know, none of my kids have food allergies, and I wanted to talk a little bit about that with you, too, because, you know, there's tons of children with food allergies. It's like one in 13 kids has some type of food allergy. Are there that many adults, too, and we've passed this on to our kids, or... There's a lot of questions right there, but what's going on with all the kids and why so many? What do you think, anyway?
And of course, I'm not a medical professional, but ask me anyway. But my layperson's I call it lay moms. My lay mom's understanding is from the research, and the latest research study funded by FAI, which is the Food Allergy Initiative, and they're the largest private funder of food allergy research in the world. The latest research shows a staggering number that 8% of children have at least one food allergy, and that is just an amazingly high number. So, yes, 1 in 12 or 1 in 13, depending on how you calculate it, but very, very high numbers. And you don't inherit food allergies per se. You can inherit the tendency to become allergic, but a parent may be allergic to, you know, pollen, and the child may have a higher tendency to become allergic to different foods. But still, right, the numbers are growing, so it's more than just genetics. There are other factors at play here, and that's probably for another discussion. But it's enough to know that this is, whether you believe in allergies or not, if you have anything to deal with the public or particularly with children, you really need to be aware of food allergies in 2011 and beyond.
Yeah, and that's one of the things I want to stress, is because people have said to me before, and I've been dealing with these food allergies myself, being allergic to nuts and peanuts and shellfish and fish now for 14 years. And people have said to me, and I'm sure kids get this all the time, or mothers get this all the time, where they say, oh, you know what, it's all in your head, or, you know, so you're a little bit sick. And people really don't believe that there really is such a thing as being allergic to food. It's almost like you can't comprehend it if you're not.
And I think that's perfectly understandable, because, you know, and I think every allergy parent really goes through that initial period that it really, really is hard to believe. And even, you know, months or years after an anaphylactic reaction, if your family has been unfortunate enough to experience that, sometimes you just look at that child who looks totally normal and think, really? You know, you really can't have a cheese stick? But it's absolutely true. And those of us, you know, if you've ever had to inject a child who is struggling to breathe, it's something that you never, ever forget, and something that I wouldn't wish on anyone. So unfortunately, because it is invisible, it is hard to believe and perceive. And as parents, we can't go ahead and feed our child a little bite of a cookie just to show you how real it really is.
No thanks.
And, you know, honestly, Elizabeth, there was one reaction that my son had. It wasn't requiring epinephrine, but he was really, his eyes were swollen, and I knew he was going to be okay. And the thought did occur to me to take a picture for some disbelieving relatives and friends. But at that point, I didn't want to do that to my son emotionally, like, you know, whip out the camera when he's, you know, feeling uncomfortable and not feeling well. I just didn't think it was appropriate. But some parents actually do that, and I'm not judging them. It's fine, whatever you need to do. They will take a picture of their child, because it's really surprising how even just physically their appearance can change dramatically, with the welts and the hives and the eyes swelling and the lips swelling. And it's pretty dramatic, it's pretty quick, and it's pretty frightening. And I always recommend to parents that they use a real-life story. You know, don't exaggerate. And even the numbers sometimes, I think, don't mean that much to people. But for people that really disbelieve, learn about a real story about a severe reaction or even a fatal reaction, and learn the facts of the story. Don't exaggerate. The truth is scary enough. And tell that story, because I believe that anybody who's a parent can relate to the fear of losing a child and the thought of losing a child. And if you can really put them in our shoes and what the fear is really about, it can really make a difference and kind of convince the disbelievers.
Well, yeah, you're right. There is nothing quite like anaphylaxis and you know, having to be injected with epinephrine. I mean, it makes my husband cringe, for example, and I can't even imagine being a mom and having the kind of violent reaction I have for a child to have that, because I have digestive anaphylaxis and the blood pressure kind. So like if somebody, for example, were to give me a peanut butter sandwich, I would go into anaphylaxis. And what happens to me, for example, I'm sure this happens to kids all around who have this, my blood pressure tanks. It just I can actually kind of breathe, but I lose consciousness. My blood pressure goes all the way down, and then your system's shut down, and you lose consciousness. There's another form of anaphylaxis too, where people can't breathe. Is that correct?
I'm not a medical professional. I'm not aware of the different kinds of anaphylaxis. I know that there are different manifestations and different kinds of symptoms.
Wild, yeah.
And that's one of the tricky parts about managing it, especially when you're educating others, because the symptoms can be very varied. You know, anything from visible welts and hives to breathing problems to loss of consciousness to gastrointestinal symptoms.
Yeah.
And that's why we recommend, when I do school trainings, I tell the teachers and administrators that if you know, if Elizabeth is in your class and you know that she has multiple food allergies, you need to look at really any symptoms that she displays with your allergy-colored glasses and rule out allergy before you move on. So I've had parents call with horror stories where they pick up their child at the end of the day and the child is really having an allergic reaction. They say, oh, we thought he just had pink eye or something. So, you know, whether if Elizabeth is lethargic, question that. Is that, could that be an allergic reaction? If she's, you know, sick to her stomach, where another kid you might think the flu, you know, if your allergic child is sick to her stomach, you have to rule out allergy before anything else and really look at all those symptoms with the allergy colored glasses.
Yeah. Can we tell a story? Can we tell the story of BJ and Brian and all of those efforts?
Sure, sure.
You had mentioned tell a story, and I know he's fine with it.
Okay.
He would be absolutely fine and approve it.
Okay. Okay.
Because I think his story is what Brian is doing is amazing, considering everything that's happened. I was wondering if you would just share that story because you kind of mentioned, you know, tell a story.
Yeah. Okay. As long as he's okay with it. So
oh, yeah.
My friend, or our mutual friend, Brian Holm, had three boys, and one of them unfortunately passed away from a food allergic reaction. His oldest son, BJ, they were celebrating as a family his high school graduation, and they were taking a trip to Mexico, and they had put down their bags and arrived at the resort, and they went to eat at a buffet. And shortly after dinner, and I hope I have these correct. Shortly after dinner, they were going to separate. Two of them were going to go one place, and the three were going to go to another. And the son, BJ, said to his dad, Brian, I need some cough drops because my throat's hurting. And looking back, it was kind of ironic because he realized that many times in life he was saying his throat was hurting. And they didn't realize then that it was probably allergic reactions. It wasn't just his throat hurting. So his dad went to get him cough drops, and then they separated, I think the dad and one of the boys or two of them were at an arcade. And the next thing you know, someone came running in and said to Brian, you need to get back to the main part of the hotel. And when he got there, his son, BJ, was lying on the ground, being tended to by his wife, his mother, BJ's mother, and some other people, and they had called for help. So in a relatively short span of time, they got some emergency care, and they thought he was unconscious, but they could find a heartbeat, and it went back and forth. And finally, they got a heartbeat, and Brian, the father, said to the doctor, he's going to be okay, isn't he? And the doctor shook his head and said, I'm so sorry. And that was the end in that short of time. So they went from packing up their bags, high school graduation, we're all going to celebrate with the three boys and the family, first night on vacation, you know how you're so excited, put the bags in the room and went down to eat. And what they suspect, I believe, is that the chocolate pudding, who would think of this, but the chocolate pudding contained peanut flour. Which, you know, obviously the lesson, there are many lessons here, but one of them is you have to read ingredients. And I don't think I personally don't think there's an allergic person, you know, by the time you get to adulthood, we take chances and it happens. It shouldn't happen. But unfortunately, I think they made the assumption that chocolate pudding was chocolate pudding, but they believe that. And the ironic thing is that one of his other sons also has a peanut allergy, and he had to be treated. He also ate the chocolate pudding and also had to be treated, but he was treated successfully and had obviously a milder reaction.
Yeah.
So Brian has just become a tremendous advocate in the face of all of this unthinkable grief. And he is out there getting the word out about food allergies. And he is in a very unique situation because not only has he lost a child to food allergies, he has another son who's suffering from food allergies as well. So it means a great deal to him, both as a cause in general, but also because of his other son who has food allergies. So walk in San Francisco, in San Jose this year. Okay. That's going to be dedicated, a walk and a run that's going to be dedicated to his son. And I'll see if I can find the date here while we're talking, but hopefully people will go out there and support that, because it's a very good cause and he's a very great advocate. We're grateful that he is willing to share that story.
Yeah, and I sort of met, you know, I met him through you, and we took the story kind of that you had on your website, and we, you know, we kind of rewrote it a little bit and put it in the magazine, this month's July's magazine, with all of, you know, July's Best Ever You magazine, with all the pictures and everything like that. But yeah, I'm really proud of Brian for working, you know, through the grief in such a positive way to help other people. Also, I don't know what else to say. I just, it breaks my heart to hear the story, because I just know, I know how close you can come to death with anaphylaxis. I mean, I've been resuscitated once, and so it's really scary. And where I want to kind of go with this is, we're going to go into your blogs and things like that, but don't you think that, you know, when you're allergic to something, food is really just scary? When you're allergic to food, food becomes sort of scary. I feel personally kind of like with every bite, unless I know for certain I've read the ingredients, and I almost wanted to say not processed in a facility with any peanuts, tree nuts, you know, this kind of stuff. Don't you think that it's scary? I feel like I'm constantly dodging death. I really do.
Well, it's definitely, food definitely becomes a charged issue. I mean, when you have, you know, for example, like in your case with the tree nuts, you almost feel, I think you can get to the point where you feel like tree nuts or peanuts, for example, because they get kind of picked on the most, or just like the enemy, like they're bad. And some people actually get to the point where they almost feel like a certain food is immoral, like you might be immoral if you're eating peanuts or tree nuts. But I think in my case, since my son has so many different allergies, I never really got to the point where I villainized one particular food, because we had a number of foods that could endanger him. And one of his worst reactions was from a tiny amount of egg, which is kind of unusual. People do not, well, I shouldn't say it's unusual. You can have a severe reaction to any food. But that's not, egg is not one of the ones that you hear as much about as maybe shellfish or peanuts or tree nuts. But I agree with you. It becomes a very charged issue. And, you know, there is a loss involved with the diagnosis, because you lose some of the spontaneity. And there is a difference in life when you can go to a party and take anything you want off the buffet table. I mean, this is something that I, you know, consider almost a privilege now, because I look at my son and I look at the world through his eyes, and he's never been able to go to a party or any kind of event, as I'm sure you haven't been able to, where you can just grab anything you want off the buffet table. He's never been able to go to a restaurant and just order something. And, you know, he's never been able to have the birthday cake at a birthday party or a slice of pizza. And it does, are there worse things in life? Absolutely, yes, there are. But still, this can be a pretty heavy load for some people.
Yeah, that's kind of how I cope with it a little bit, too, being kind of thankful that I don't have something worse. You know, that I am here. I'm working my way through the different things and stuff. And but, yeah, that same kind of positive reaction to it.
Well, and I think it can be sort of a, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think it could be sort of a kaleidoscope. I mean, you can look at it with a different lens on a different day, because I think on
sure
some
can,
days,
you?
When you have a bad, what's that?
I said, you sure can, can't you? Depending on what happens.
Yeah, on some days, you know, I think it's okay to have a little bit of a pity party and just, you know, be mad or sad, especially, you know, with my son. There were times early on when I really didn't tolerate him, you know, being sad or mad. I almost didn't let him grieve about it, because I wanted him to feel good so much that I almost denied validating his feelings. And I think sometimes, you know, when you call your girlfriend and you're just having a bad day and you just want to vent, you don't need her to solve the problems. You know, I think kids have the same need. And that was part of also one of the things in my book. I wanted to validate their feelings. You know, sometimes you feel sad about food allergies. Sometimes you feel mad about food allergies. And, yeah, you can flip over to the good side. But you know what? Some days you do just need to vent a little bit, and that's okay too.
Oh, yeah. There's some days where I'm flat out just mad. You know, and I'm not kidding, because I wasn't born with food allergies in my case. I developed them after pregnancy, after the second birth. And So something in my body must have changed. There's all sorts of theories, like maybe I gave him something that so he's not allergic and it depleted me. There's all sorts of, you know, thinking going on there. But you're darn right, people. You get fighting mad about it because you're right. You know, you can't eat the cake like everybody else, or you can't just grab a handful of nuts out of the mixed nut bowl at Christmas time and the nutcracker mm-hmm. and, you know, all that stuff. It's very frustrating. I was going to ask you, for those listening with children with food allergies, what allergies, if this is too much, let me know too, what allergies does your son have?
He doesn't have soy, but the rest okay. he has. And he has even had some other ones like mustard and sesame and some. He has a little bit of oral allergy with fruits and some of the legumes, the beans. Mm-hmm. So he's got a whole host. And a lot of those are difficult, but once you have the trifecta of milkweed and egg, it makes cooking or eating out virtually impossible. It's very, very tough.
What does he eat?
He eats all of the meats. He can eat any meat or chicken. He cannot eat fish. Okay. So he can eat chicken, beef, and pork, and he can eat corn and rice and potato, and he
sounds
can
like
eat
what
some
I eat.
Vegetables.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, he can eat some junky candy too, which makes childhood fun. So I probably let him have more junk than I would prefer, because I try to eat organic. But trying to balance the emotional, you know, he can't go have the birthday cake, so maybe you have some junky Swedish, well, not junky, but you know, sugary candy or something. That's
yeah.
Strangely, even with all of his allergies, there's a lot of candy out there that just has sugar and food cuts. Maybe it's not even real food, and that's why it's safe, because it doesn't even have any real food protein in it. But I'm exaggerating.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
I get it.
You know, he does okay, but I'm sure, like you and some other people, he has, like, that food fatigue where you're eating a lot of the same things all the time, and we really only have one restaurant where he can eat. So it gets a little – it's like if there's a holiday and we're going to eat out, we're only going to go to this one place, and it gets boring sometimes.
That's my life too, and why I keep making the point of me is not to talk about me, but I'm trying to make a point about when the children grow up. It's really important to me to, I'm one of the older people with this type of allergy, and I've been dealing with it for a really long time. And so for me, I keep saying, yes, it's in the schools right now, but it's going to be in the colleges, the universities, the workplaces, the airlines, and everywhere as time marches on here. And there are a lot of kids. If there's 1 in 12 kids with food allergies, there are a ton of people. Because, like for me, the last really bad allergic reaction I had, where I got sent to the hospital in anaphylactic shock, was when somebody came into my office with a handful of nuts and offered me some. And I have an airborne mm-hmm. allergy to tree nuts and peanuts. Mm-hmm. So it was lethal right there. Within 5 minutes, we were, you know, Epi-ing and Benadryl and on the way to the hospital. So that's an adult life. That's what happens. That's the adult version of what goes on in the schools. Do you think mm-hmm. there's going to be a need for change?
Oh, absolutely. I think you make such an excellent point. This is relatively new. I think one statistic said that 40 years ago it was like 1 in 100, and now, as we know, that, you know, 1 in 12. So the numbers are definitely growing. There's one study that literally calls, you know, allergy an epidemic at this point. So, yes, I do think that things are going to change. They used to think, and maybe it was the case 20 or 30 years ago, that kids outgrew a lot of these allergies like milkweed and egg by school age, and now that they're really looking at it, that's not the case. They're taking a lot longer. Some of them will never outgrow these allergies, and even the ones who do are outgrowing them, you know, at 10, 12, 15, you know, even later. So we're definitely, it's an allergy nation for sure, and yes, I do think that there's things are changing, and I think things will continue to change, and I do think that things need to change. One of the great things that's happening is that, you know, we have about a dozen states now that have passed food allergy guidelines for schools, so that rather than having these parents going in there and trying to, you know, make things safe and have accommodations put in place for their children, when the states have these guidelines, then public schools or schools that receive federal funds need to have accommodations and need to have plans in place to keep allergic children safe. So that's one area where we're moving in the right direction. And then just, you know, in the food field, I mean, there's so many, and I'm sure you've seen this in the past 10 years, the number of allergy-friendly companies has just exploded. You know, when my son was first diagnosed 9 years ago, I mean, there weren't nearly as many companies, and even the few that were around, the substitute foods were not that great, but now they have delicious, you know, anything from gluten-free, dairy-free, egg-free, nut-free, any kind of cookies or goodies or, you know, baked goods or bread, so there's a lot of things. And, you know, I think you mentioned the airline, and of course this has been an issue for my family just very recently, and I think this is a really important issue, and I think things need to change in that area as well.
Yeah. Do you want to, okay, so I'm, at this point in the conversation, do you want to talk about the Food Allergy Network, or should we talk about the airline? Which one should we go for first?
Well, we can talk about, you mean fan? You want to talk about fan?
You want to talk about fan?
Sure.
Or should we talk about the airline, our airline thing a little bit
let's
first?
Talk about, well, let's talk about fan for a minute, because
okay.
I get really excited because
I love them.
One of the joys of just being in this club that I never asked to be in is just, you know, meeting people like you and just people who will, like, jump to your, you know, jump to help you at any point. But early on, you know, years ago, there were a few of us who were just starting out. As we said, I started my blog in 2006, and I've had the pleasure of working with people like my friend Nicole Shields-Smith, who runs Allergic Child, and other people along the way. And one of the wonderful women advocates I met is Marie Ossebal. And I met her. She had a small nonprofit called Safe at School Partners, and she was determined, as an attorney, she wanted to make things very easy and accessible to train schools. So she started out from scratch and decided, how can I make this, what do they need to know, and make it very concise and very clear so that there wasn't a lot of extraneous material, and any parent could take that material, go into a school, go into a teacher, go into a preschool and train. So she did this nonprofit, and then a few years later, she got hired by FAN, the Food Allergy and Anaphylaxis Network. They're at foodallergy.org, but they're known by FAN, F-A-A-N. And she joined FAN a few years ago as their general counselor and research administrator, general counsel. And she was just recently, last month, named as CEO of FAN. And so I'm, like, bubbling over with excitement because I just, on a personal level and on a professional level, I just think she's the absolute cream of the crop. She is just brilliant, attorney, Yale-educated, and just has such a heart of gold and is just really an honest, wonderful person. And also, the icing on the cake is, and it's unfortunate for her daughter, that her daughter has a severe peanut allergy, but it's fortunate for us because I just think that people who live this life have a different kind of passion for the cause. And while I believe others can also have that, it's just so different when it's personal and when it's your own child. So I'm really, really excited for what Maria is going to be doing for FAN in the months and years ahead. And I think it's really great for the food allergy community.
Yeah. So so one of the things that I wanted to just bring up here to just kind of cement what you're talking about is, if there's anybody listening out there who has a food allergy, or you have a child with a food allergy, or a friend, a neighbor, or whatever, family member, please join FAN. So that's foodallergy.org. They are probably, do you think maybe the first step? I kind of go one step, two step, FAN, and then right to medical alert. Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, I really think that FAN, the resources they have, it's invaluable. A lot of us, when our children were first diagnosed, it was the first step that we took.
Yeah.
With membership now, they're even adding to the benefits. They have a newsletter that comes out 6 times a year. There's a free one for your children. They have now a new feature for members that's the expert features. And every month, they have a different expert. For example, in July, the expert is Dr. Scott Sisher, from the Mount Sinai, the Jaffe Clinic, which is the food allergy clinic at Mount Sinai. It's where they're doing all of the amazing cutting-edge research on food allergies, like the Chinese herbal formula for food allergies and baked milk and baked egg studies and a number of the peanut patch, a number of other studies. He is really, you may have seen him on CNN, he's often quoted in the media, he's really a food allergy expert extraordinaire, and he actually takes members' questions this month and answers them. So if you are a FAN member, you can write in. Next month they're having a back to school, they're having 4 experts for back to school. They're having Dr. Todd Marr, who is not only an allergist, but he is the parent of a food allergic son, and Kristen Kakias, a social worker who's also a parent of children with food allergies, and Jane Wessler, an attorney, who's going to address questions on Section 504 plans and on plans that you can get in school to have your child safe. So these are just a few examples of the benefits of membership with FAN. I mean, you're getting access to the best information really in the entire world on food allergies. So if you, whether you're new to this world and you need help with recipes, which is free, if you need coupons, they have special offers for members, if you want to attend a conference at a discounted rate, all of this is included with the FAN membership, and definitely visit their website at foodallergy.org. And even if you've been around for a while, this is not the same FAN of 10 years ago or even 5 years ago. Things are different, and there's a lot more features today.
Yeah, in fact, when I was very first diagnosed with food allergies, it was my first step 14 years ago, and I got to tell you, I didn't follow through. I just was like, okay, this isn't going to help me right now. I'm trying to maneuver through all the different things here and figure out what's wrong and what I'm allergic to. And, they recommended me to go to an allergist and get skin testing. Well, I had an anaphylactic reaction to the skin testing. So, my life has been, as with anybody, when you're first diagnosed with allergies, it's a whirlwind of different emotions, different coping, grief. There's scary, there's so many things that go through having the allergies or being a parent of a child with a food allergy or the child itself. It's very scary. So FAN is, I just rejoined, and FAN is wonderful.
Oh, great.
I was so
And you're right,
because
there's
kit.
The emotional and the, oh, sorry.
Oh, no, I was so impressed with the kit they sent to me. I was like, now we got it going. It was like, okay.
Oh, good.
I
good.
Felt
That's
like
wonderful.
Really, really and truly, when I first had allergies 14 years ago, I felt like a total, I just really did. I felt like a freak. I felt like no one had this. No one knew what it was. No one, you know what I mean? I felt so alone and like, isolated and strange, and they couldn't eat out anymore or anything. And it quickly turned with the support, though, of allergists. And and for anybody now, FAN, MedicAlert, there's so many tools. Allergymoms.com, there's so many tools now and resources and tips and people and support, much, much different than it was 14 years ago. I mean,
right. Yeah, and I know I hear from a lot of people that they'll go to one of the FAN walks, and it's the first, like everywhere you turn, it's people who, there's no eye rolling. It just soothes that feeling of isolation that you mentioned, because I hear that so often. You just feel so alone. And, there's the practical aspects, which
like
are huge, and then there's the emotional aspects. And that's what I love about the FAN walks and the conferences, because you are there rubbing elbows. There's everybody there gets it. Everybody there knows what you've been going through, and they're either a few steps ahead of you or a few steps behind you. And if you can smooth the way or pave the way a little bit for someone who's a few steps behind you, it just feels so good inside, because you know what they're going through, just what you're describing. So the community, because of what FAN does with the walks and the conferences, there's just no substitute for being able to talk with and have the support of the people who are in the same boat that you are. And it really, I know some of my closest friends now are parents of children with food allergies, and even though we barely discuss it on a regular basis anymore, it's just such a relief to, kind of hang out with people who don't roll their eyes when you whip out your wet wipes and wipe down the, the coffee table or whatever it is. It's really nice to have that camaraderie.
Yeah, I really and truly, for the past 14 years, my life has kind of gone like this at a restaurant. I have really bad food allergies. They're like the life or death kind, and I'm allergic to nuts, shellfish, peanuts, tree nuts. And so what am I going to eat on your menu that isn't going to send me into anaphylactic shock tonight? That kind of thing. Mm-hmm. What do I need to do? And you just feel so strange. But that's the kind of life allergic people lead. It really is, so that we stay safe. And it's snack time. It's breakfast time, lunch time, dinner time, snack time, out to eat everywhere. And anyway, it's just so wonderful, because I especially think things have changed with, you're paving the way the past 5 years. It's just so cool to see all the things you've done. I'm so thrilled to have you tonight as a guest. because you can see your work changing people's lives. It really is. You've made such a big difference.
Well, that's nice.
I hope you know that. It shows. So I do want to
thank you.
Yeah, I do want to just remind people that we're speaking with Gina Close. She's the founder and director of the online support group AllergyMoms.com, and you can go to her website AllergyMoms.com. Gina's a certified life coach who specializes in the needs of parents of children with food allergies, and she's also the author of the best-selling children's book, One of the Gang, Nurturing the Souls of Children with Food Allergies. You also write a new column called The Parenting Coach, and that's in Allergic Living Magazine. Would you talk about that a little bit?
Oh, yes, I love Allergic Living Magazine.
It?
Yes, and it used to be in Canada, and now, well, it still is in Canada, sorry, and now they have a United States version, and we're on our second issue right now. And okay. Gwen Smith, who's the editor, along with Kim Schiffman here, are both wonderful. And Gwen suffers from food allergies herself. So it's, again, another example of someone who walks the walk. I mean, she knows what we're dealing with from on a very personal level. And I love this magazine. I think it's just chock full of every kind of information you can want. They always have Q&A from actual allergists, and Scott Fisher is one of the allergists that they feature in their magazine in the U.S. version. And they also are really, really in touch with the emotional side, which is my real mm-hmm. passion. I mean, I think that's one of the things that at least 5 years ago was very overlooked, and the emotional toll both on the children and on the parents. This is why I became a life coach. It's huge. Yeah. And if parents get support, particularly early on, they seem to fare much better. And those that are kind of left struggling, it can take a lot longer to get your sea legs again. So I like to be able to work with parents early after the diagnosis, and they can kind of get their feet back under them again quickly. And that's the purpose of my article, really, for parents who have children with food allergies. It's a balance of the practical and the emotional help. So, you know, there are tips, you know, you may not think of for, you know, Halloween. When the kids are little, you can buy a pumpkin and fill it with the exact chock full of safe candy, and then you let your 2 or 3 year old go trick-or-treating with safely, carrying your wipes and your EpiPen and everything. And then you come home, and while they're washing their hands, you switch and give them the pumpkin. There are little strategies and stuff like that. For older kids, you can buy them a toy or a video game or trade them for money. So we'll share tips like that are practical, but we're also talking about the emotional side. This month I did an article on getting ready for school, and it got a huge response. People really liked it. And my views, I'm very moderate in my stance, but I give specific tips on what you can do. You know, don't exaggerate. Use a story to illustrate your point to people who are not familiar. But also emotional support. And, you know, really how you approach people is as important as what you say, because a lot of times we're so anxious when we talk to other people that if other people only sense our anxiety, they can barely hear our message. And so that's important so that you can work on yourself and get yourself in a good place before you even initiate a meeting. And, you know, another example is some people are so angry because maybe they've been given misinformation or they've been mistreated by a school administrator, and they go into a meeting with guns blazing. Well, what are your chances of success if you're going in there very angry? You know, not so good. So the issue that's out right now talks about how to advocate for your children at school. And they also have a great forum that you can go to at allergicliving.com. So if you, again, for people, whether you're newly diagnosed or whether you've had them for a while, because this magazine even has a lot of stuff I'm sure you're interested in, Elizabeth, with, you know, mm-hmm. on cosmetics and, you know, really a lot of tips that you can't find elsewhere. So I highly recommend it.
Yeah. And, you know, we talked a little bit about Food Allergy Network, which is foodallergy.org, and we talked about Allergic Living, and I think their website is allergicliving.com, I believe.
Uh-huh.
Can we talk a little bit about Medic Alert? Because I really believe, in my heart anyway, that that's the second step after joining Food Allergy Network, is making sure those kiddos and adults, if you have food allergies too, put a Medic Alert on. Would you like to talk about Medic Alert?
Sure, you can too, but I mean, I would just say,
but
well, I'll let you talk, certainly you should speak to that, but I would just say that I'm all for anything that really raises the profile of food allergies, to kind of elevates the importance in people's minds. People who know me know that I'm a strong advocate for a Section 504 plan in school, which is a written and signed plan that's legally binding document. And one of the reasons is just because it raises the profile in everyone's mind when you put that signature on the page. And along the same line, having that bracelet on, you know, hopefully you never need it in an emergency, but if you do, it's absolutely essential. And even when you don't need it, I think that it really is a reminder for other people to see that on there and remember that this is the child who has the allergies. And it, again, it'll serve that purpose where you're reminded to view these child or any symptoms this child has with the allergy-colored glasses. So that would be my take, but I'd love to hear what you have to say.
Well, you know, I've been resuscitated twice, and I've had about 20 or so episodes of anaphylaxis. And probably more than half of those occasions, the medic alert itself has helped save my life. And what I mean by that is a lot of times when I'll approach a parent and say, you know, Kimmy should have a medic alert on there or take a look at this, you know, medic alert is great. They say, oh, you know what, I'm around Timmy all the time. You know, I'm with him all the time. And at school, they are aware of his allergies. So that becomes sort of a tough, tough thing to, you know, counter. But, you know, I do still think the child should have a medic alert on, and they've made some really neat bracelets for kids specifically. You know, they've got little Swarovski crystals now for girls and camo bands for boys. You know, they have all sorts of different ones. And, it's one of those things that I agree with you. It just raises the awareness, and it reminds the child also that they have an allergy. In case, like Andrew Morris said, example here in Falmouth, he was just wanting to be one of the kids and eat. And, a few weeks ago in school, probably about a month ago now, he went into anaphylaxis with, you know, eating the snack that had peanuts in it. So, you know, that's one thing about the bracelets. But I don't know, Medic Alert, the EMTs are trained to look at your neck and your wrist. And as you get older and you're left in situations where you're alone or, you know, like in a mall or driving or a number of things, the bracelet helps save your life because the emergency crews are trained to look. And they just flip it over and it says right on the back what's wrong. And there's numbers to call. And, you know, it's just Medic Alert's just an amazing resource, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and as we know, the teenagers are really the high risk group for allergies. So yeah, or for severe reactions. So it's good to have that extra layer of protection.
Yeah, and do you want to talk about airlines a little bit? I know we're kind of jumping
sure.
around a little bit because I just want to cover all these topics with you and so forth. So you recently were, I know this all so well because over the past 14 years of my life, I had all sorts of airline encounters with not allergies, but you were recently flying and had a doozy of one. Can you talk about it?
Well, I do fly with my son who has allergies every year, and I was coming home from actually speaking at a fan conference in California, and mm-hmm. I smelled what I thought was nuts or peanuts, like baking or cooking. And I thought to myself, geez, that's funny. I can't believe they would be cooking with peanuts or nuts. And when I asked about it, they said, yes, they are baking them in first class. So I didn't panic because I feel like I'm pretty moderate, and I thought that I could just call. I knew that we were flying the same airline and on an upcoming trip, and I thought that I could just call them and explain my son's situation, and they would accommodate me by not baking or roasting the nuts while in flight. I wasn't going to ask them not to serve them because in my son's case, having a few people on board eating nuts, it would not cause him any harm according to his doctor and according to our experience. But I know that roasting or baking can aerosolize the protein, and although it may be uncommon, it can cause a reaction. And we did once need to leave a Chinese restaurant. He wasn't eating the food. I had packed his food. But we took our sons there for my older son's birthday, and my younger son felt sick. He felt like he had something in his throat, and his eyes were getting red, so we had to leave. And another time when I was cooking egg at home, he had a mild reaction. So I just – you don't want to take any chances when you fly. It's really scary to fly with an allergic child.
Isn't it?
And as you know, you're always trying to balance – your safety with living a normal life. You want to, if you need to restrict a little bit, you will, but you don't want to go overboard. So anyway, I called them and basically I talked to several people at the airline and they said, we're still going to roast the nuts.
Oh yeah.
And I was really surprised by that. So,
yeah.
And I also was, a little upset that they don't specifically say that on their website. I thought people with allergies are very well aware that baking or cooking aerosolizes proteins. And that if they do that, I would like to be able to make the choice ahead of time. And I thought that they should have had that listed there. So I blogged about it, and I just was overwhelmed with calls and emails and tweets and, you know, just people writing to me about these, you know, horror stories with certain airlines. There were other airlines where the majority of people, allergic people, really sang the praises. For example, Southwest, who does serve peanuts but will make some nice accommodations when you ask because of an allergy.
Oh, they won't, so, actually. They won't serve them if there's somebody on board with an allergy. They pull out the pretzels in a heartbeat. That's my favorite airline for
you know, that, I love how
allergies.
You said that, like pull out the pretzels in a heartbeat. And, I mean, I have to say, hats off. A few people did say something today. They're like, well, they weren't good for me. Well, you know, you could go to any place every day and there's mistakes are going to be made. But overwhelmingly, people sang the praises of Southwest. And we, too, have had very good luck with them. And I think that the word that comes to mind is customer service. I mean, I was a clearance services director for years. And, I mean, it was about, you know, you can create a win-win in any situation. And Southwest is onto something. I mean, maybe they say, you know, 8%, 12 million people. You know, maybe they're like, this is – because – and you probably know this. When I just spoke at a conference in Salt Lake City, and people came up to me because they had read my blog, and they said, we don't ever fly. We want to take our son to Disneyland, and we will not fly with him because when we called, they wouldn't tell us. And one of the things that the airline told me was, you know, ask the flight attendant, you know, before you board. And I said, you know, you wouldn't ask, you know, can I have a wheelchair? You wouldn't say, well, ask when you get there. You know, this, you know, some children with allergies and some adults with allergies are considered disabled under the law. Okay, not all of them, but some of them are. And in those cases, when a doctor recommends something and when it's reasonable, I think that we need to accommodate these allergic passengers. I wasn't even asking them not to serve nuts in first class. I was asking them not to bake them while in flight, you know. And I thought that was pretty reasonable.
Yeah,
I don't want any company to lose money, you know, but I believe that, you know, they probably are losing money by all these families who aren't flying.
Well,
and
that's
certainly
exactly
who aren't.
It. If, you know, if the 1 in 12 kids has, you know, a food allergy, the, you know, I guess maybe not a nut allergy exactly, but, you know, it's got to be a high statistic. Why do you think airlines are just so, and again, personal opinion, whatever, why do you think airlines are so hung up on serving peanuts? Why can't it be Twinkies or something? You know, why does it have to be peanuts? I don't get it. What the fascination?
Well,
is
I think
with
there
peanuts.
Was a lot of backlash when people were not allowed to smoke on planes. I mean, for one thing, you know, the first class passengers, they pay a premium for those seats, and I have nothing against nuts or peanuts. I happen to like them, and I'm sure when they're warmed up, they're yummy. That's great. But I certainly wouldn't want to eat. I don't want to eat anything that's going to harm anybody else. And it may in fact be a perk that they do like, but in this situation, I'm sorry, you know, there are people that need accommodations. My son and other people with allergies deserve to breathe air that's not going to pose a health risk to them. Yeah. And, you know, in this case, I actually wrote to my son's doctor and asked without even saying what my opinion was, just to make sure, because I like to ask for what's needed but not more. And I said, is this safe? And she advised us not to expose him to any kind of baking nuts or peanuts while in flight. So, you know, I think it was pretty reasonable. And I guess my thought is, I think on the one hand that they're trying to accommodate their first class passengers. And on the other hand, people in general, there were, you know, I have done a few radio shows and there are some nasty comments. People will say, you know, leave your kid home in a bubble, stay home, whatever. I think allergic children, allergic passengers deserve access to air travel. I mean, we're paying taxes for the FAA and everything else. And the Air Carrier Access Act says that disabled passengers deserve accommodations as long as they don't fundamentally change the program. And I don't really think that the actual temperature of the nuts is going to fundamentally change any airlines program. I think that there are, you know, hot fudge sundaes, cherry pie a la mode. There are lots of other yummy snacks that you could serve in first class that would probably. And, you know, their argument that, well, the first class passengers want that. I'm sure there are first class passengers that would like to have a cigarette or a cigar after dinner. But, you know, there are certain things that we can't do in the air and certain things that we can't do when we fly. I'd like to take my 4-ounce shampoo, but, you know, this is a
3 ounces. Sorry. Well, what I was giggling about earlier is because I really do truly love Southwest. I like them and I love Air Trans. Delta is close there. They'll do like peanut free zones and they're very serious about it. But Southwest is by far. I have flown everything over the past 14 years and they're leading the way. What they did, you know how they joke around on the intercom? You know, they'll tell jokes, mm-hmm. crack jokes. They're very funny. They were like, okay, ladies and gentlemen, of the 10 million people that have food allergies worldwide, we've got one. And that means, mm-hmm. you know, they totally made it funny. And I was like, oh, thank God, I'm going to live through this flight. And, you know, we flew our family. It was the first vacation we've taken in a really long time on air travel. Because of my allergies, they're so severe. They're airborne nut allergies. We went to Tahoe and back and had great flights back and forth because they were so cool about it. They knew I was coming, and I said, you know, I have airborne anaphylaxis to peanuts and tree nuts. And they said, no problem. We got you covered. Have a seat. And they were totally cool
wow.
about it. Yeah, and I called ahead. I let them know. And so I, you know, as a person with these airborne allergies, it's not a matter of roasting them or not roasting them. It's a matter of don't serve them anywhere near me on the plane.
Mm-hmm.
Or we're not going to land where we're supposed to land. We're going to be landing in the ER room. And, mm-hmm. you know, and they were just awesome. So hats off to Southwest Airlines. You know, and I
yes.
hope people, I don't know that every flight needs to be nut-free, but, you know, maybe a few. You know, I think, you know, get those kids to Disneyland. Let's have some flights to, because I want to go to
yeah.
Disney and I can't go because, you know, I've been afraid to fly. It's life or death in the air. And one of the last times I flew, one of the things they like to do when I fly is say, okay, we won't serve them, but we can't help it if somebody brought peanuts on board or tree nuts. We can't prevent them from eating them. But we'll make an announcement that lets everybody know that you have allergies. This is what some of the airlines have done for me over the years. So they'll say so-and-so in flight, you know, in seat 16A has a severe peanut and tree nut allergy. If you've brought this on board, please don't open it and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And the last time I sat right next to somebody and they didn't know it was me exactly, you know, they said in this row. And it was a slur, and it was a crack open of the nuts, and I'm going to eat them anyway. And they got nut stuff all over me, and I got sick.
Oh.
So it's, you know, and thank God we hadn't taken off yet or anything, but it's that kind of stuff. When you're flying, I just feel for these kids because I'm an adult. I can kind of handle it a little. Still very scary, but kids.
Well, I think the more we can.
Yeah.
The more we can educate, you know, in a moderate and articulate way, the more it helps. Because I have to believe that person who opened the nuts really didn't believe it. That's
no.
I kind of have to believe that because otherwise it's too frightening. But I think people just, they don't know what they don't know. And we, you know, you don't really want to look up the peanut dust just to show them what will happen, obviously.
No.
But if they really would see what would happen, you know, having experienced it myself, I mean, it's shocking. It's shocking what can happen with a tiny amount of, you know, any food that someone is allergic to. And, you know, as we know from Brian's story or Sabrina Shannon's story and many other stories, it's trace amounts, you know, can be cause serious, even a fatal reaction. So it's real. And I think that, you know, even from the airline's perspective, I mean, holy cow, when they, you know, to have to emergency land the plane upsets their schedule for an entire day and I'm sure costs them a small fortune. But even, you know, morally, you just want to do right by people and not have anything like that happen.
I've been refused flights before where people said, I'm sorry, but, you know, you can't board if you've got that severe of a nut allergy. Find a different way to get there. And so, you know, that's wrong. I think that's just wrong. And that was probably about 5 or 6 years ago. So I should have blogged about it, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. All right. Well, yeah, you know, and that's part of me just kind of coping. I didn't, because it's me just coping with all these things happening to me for the past, you know, so many years. With 5 minutes left to go, I was wondering, I don't think we talked about FAI enough. Do you want to talk about that organization a little bit?
Sure. So I chair the advocacy committee for the Food Allergy Initiative, and the Food Allergy Initiative is another big food allergy nonprofit, and they're the largest private funder of food allergy research, and they have a pretty tight mission. Most of what they do is funding research, and they also work on advocacy issues. So they've had some great success with some restaurant legislation in New York, and they work to support advocates in other states who are working on food allergy guidelines. Right now they have been assisting on the effort, along with FAN, in Texas to get school guidelines passed there. So they get involved in some advocacy issues as well. And there really, really is some very promising research going on right now that's been funded by FAI. The one thing that they just really came out with was the study was showing 8%, one of the largest studies ever done on prevalency. But they are funding a lot of what's going on at the Jaffe Clinic with the food allergy herbal formula and other research, not only across the country, but even across the world. So this is, I mean, there are many irons in the fire, so to speak, and very, very grateful for the work that FAI does. And it's been a pleasure of mine to work with them and volunteer with them over the years. I'm very proud that my son has been able to be treated by Shuman Lee, who is the doctor who is working on the food allergy herbal formula. He sees her as a private patient, and you know, he was on, I think, 7 medications a few years ago and is now just doing some herbal formula and some lingual immunotherapy, and he does not have asthma, and his eczema, which was just chronic. I mean, he had open and weeping eczema, and his skin is really clear right now. So it's a process, but I'm just really grateful because a lot of Dr. Lee's research has been funded by the Food Allergy Initiative. So amazing. You may have seen Robert Kennedy Jr. is one of the on the board of FAI. His son Connor, I believe, has food allergies, and they've just done really phenomenal work through the years. And Dave Bunning, he and his wife have been an incredible support for the food allergy community, whether it's FAN or FAI. They've been very supportive, and Dave is now working on the board there with Todd Slotkin, the chairperson at FAI. So it's a wonderful organization, and you can sign up on their website too, and that way you can add your voice, and it's for free. It's not even asking for a donation, although that's always welcome. But if you sign up at FAIUSA.org or foodallergyinitiative.org, then when they have a call for action or for advocacy in your area, you can add your name to the list, or even just it'll automatically send out letters to your representatives to just raise the profile of food allergies in the mind of our elected officials, which is very important when we want to get legislation passed.
Yeah. What do you think is the number one issue right now with food allergies? What's the hot? We have 2 minutes left. Keep in mind too. So I've opened up a can of worms. But what do you think is the number one? Like, what's your number one hot topic or something that you'd like to see addressed? Or, you know, what is that for you?
Okay. Well, the two things that I hear of most from parents are the emotional issue and schools. I feel like I have schools. It's not foolproof, but if I can work with a woman before she starts working with the school, I have a really good way. I'm very successful in helping them. Once you get entangled in a mess, it's hard to untangle. But I feel like schools is almost, you can work with schools. The emotional thing is different. I think these families are reeling, whether it's from the first diagnosis or from the first anaphylaxis, and that's really my passion, the emotional toll. I really love supporting women and men and their children, and just because it's almost like they need a compassionate witness to the pain and the trauma of the diagnosis or of the first reaction. And I feel like if you can soothe that isolation, that terror, that fear, that overwhelm, you can make it so much more manageable on the journey. And there is work to be done, but to know that you're not alone and to know that you're going to get through the really murky areas, I think can make a real difference in people's lives. And that's my personal passion.
Good. Well, you know, that's the difference in my life. So I thank you very much, because when you reached out to me in 2006 to ask me to be in your book, it was the first normal feeling I had with food allergies. It really was. And I was on a mending path from there. I was like, oh, thank God. You know, I can help somebody. It really put a star in it for me, knowing that I could help kids or help someone or something, because I was just suffering. So I appreciate you more than you know. And we only have 30 seconds, so I just want to turn people back to you and your website, allergymoms.com. Again, thank you, Gina, for being with us. This is Gina Close, everybody. She just does amazing things in the food allergy community, and I hope you all take a look at her website, which is allergymoms.com. And we'll follow up on besteveryou.com and bestevery.com. And I thank you all very much for listening. Thank you, Gina.
Thank you. Take care.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.